time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Block Tech brings us our quick tip of the week by saying, I often pull my MacBook Pro out of my travel bag only to find that the battery is dead or extremely depleted. It seems that if I close the lid immediately after invoking the shutdown command, it doesn't always have time to complete the process and instead goes to sleep mid-process. To make sure that my machine has completely shut down before closing the lid, I now press the caps lock key first. After shutting down, I know the lid is safe to shut once the key's LED turns off. I just wish that there was a way to turn off the startup on open or key press function, as I find that I still sometimes inadvertently restart the machine when closing it up. More quick tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1036 for Monday, May 6th, National Beverage Day, something near and dear to our hearts here at Mac Geek Gab 2024. Greetings, folks, and indeed, welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in quick tips just like that one. You send in your questions, which we try to answer. We all send in cool stuff found. We all send in quick tips, too. And really, sometimes we all send in questions. Like, I'll bring questions to the show, and hopefully we get to answer it together. We also sometimes answer questions in our Discord community at MacGeekGab.com/Discord. And when I say sometimes, I mean all the time. Huge community of fantastic, well-intentioned folks who are kind and helpful to one another. I can't be more thankful for that as part of our community here. Our sponsors for today include LinkedIn.com/MGG, where you can go and post your first job for free. Backblaze.com/MGG, where you can go and start protecting yourself from potential bad times. And also BetterHelp.com/GeekGab. That one's a little bit different. BetterHelp.com/GeekGab, where you can learn about doing therapy completely online. We will talk more in depth about each and every one of these shortly. Here, for now, drinking my beverage of choice for today, Throat Coat Tea, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here, newly in Lee, New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete. Yeah, that's the cool thing about our Discord channel. There's no flaming going on over there. The only flaming that seems to be going on around here, Dave, is towards me at the hands of your AI.
This is true. There's a not entirely kind moment in one of the ad spots, and I swear I was reading an AI generated script, and so Pete, I and the AI thank you for being the butt of that upcoming joke. Yes, that's right.
There you go.
Yes.
So,
what are you drinking here on National Beverage Day, Pete?
I am having it's kind of a cappuccino thing.
Nice.
It's coffee and a couple years back, I should put it in a cool stuff found. It's one of those Nescafe milk foamers.
Okay.
Foams up the milk nicely.
Nice.
And yeah.
Nice.
Little spring loaded magnetic wheel in there, spins around, foams the milk up, heats it up too.
Sweet.
And I put it in my coffee, and otherwise I don't drink anything in my coffee. I like it black.
But, okay. Yeah.
But I'll foam up some milk now.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. It's a little bonus
drinking
cool
it.
Stuff found.
Yeah. Drinking it in my So There I Was mug.
Oh, awesome. Very nice. Very nice. I like it.
Yeah. So, in an effort to get number one of five new things. Oh, and let me, I was going to mention it, but you mentioned it in the quick tip. Yeah, you can't touch any of the buttons or your machine's going to come back on.
Yeah, that's
when
right.
you try to shut down. Yeah. I hate that. Apple, there's a power button for a reason. Use it.
Yeah. 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 The space bar to wake up the computer is great. The space bar to turn on the computer or open the lid to turn on the computer.
Not so great.
Yeah. But is that our bias because it's how it used to work? Like, do our kids care about this? Because they don't know any different. necessarily.
I mean, somebody cares because it got so bad that the gent who does Better Touch Tool, and I can't think of his name, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because I'm tired, like you, came up with the keyboard lockout program. So you could clean your keyboard without, you know, waking your computer up or messing everything up.
Yeah, so, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It just seems to me, why have a power button if...
Yeah.
I guess to cut its throat and turn it off, but you don't want to turn your computer off that way.
No.
It's bad for it.
It is bad for it. Yeah. That's right.
How about I take us to Uncle Jamie and another quick tip?
Let's do that.
All right.
I did say, I don't think I said that our goal with the show is to learn at least five new things each time we get together. I know.
Oh. Yeah. We've got one, though. Use your caps lock LED to make sure your computer's off.
All right. Bring us to number two here, Pete.
Yeah, Uncle Jamie says, I use this tip frequently. In Preview on the Mac, you can merge PDFs, merge pages from PDFs, and delete and reorder pages within a PDF document. To do this, open your PDF documents in Preview and select View Thumbnails. It should be checked. You can drag thumbnails representing pages from one document to another and drop them where you want them. Be sure to drag them into the thumbnail area on the left. You can also drag thumbnails up or down to reorder pages within the document. And if you select a thumbnail, you can delete that page by pressing the backspace or the delete key, depending on your keyboard's layout. This is handy to assemble documents that have been scanned or generated separately into a single PDF. And I've done some of that. You kind of forget how versatile Preview is.
Preview is great for things like this. You can also mark things up with it. You can sign things with it. It has become, for what many of us need to do most of the time, Preview has become I don't want to say fully featured PDF editor or PDF tool, but it's good. Yeah, it's more than just what you need in a pinch. I do want to share that the thumbnails, I guess he shared it there as well, but making sure that you bring up thumbnails by going to View Thumbnails or Option Command 2 just to bring that view up so that you can then do all of that work. But
manipulate it, right?
Yeah. It doesn't always open that.
And it's been a long time since we mentioned it, so I will mention PDF Expert is the full-featured, very intuitive PDF editing tool that you turned me on to. I was using PDF Pen for years.
And same.
PDF Expert is hands down a better program.
Oh, yeah.
Available with a student discount if you have a child with a .edu.
Oh, interesting.
Email address.
I mean, if you're paying the bill for college.
I'm paying the tuition, brother. I should get some of that discount back.
I'm with you. Yeah, because they don't make that cheap these days, the tuition thing. Yeah.
No, in fact, I always like to say, if any of you out there have $250,000 I can borrow, and by borrow I mean have and not give back, send it to Pilot Pete at MacGeekGab.
Oh, yeah. You know, do we even have... I know we're going to have to make that email address for you. I will take care of that. Yeah. I'll take care of that after the show. All right. I'm making myself a note that I promise I won't put in the show notes when we actually publish them. I had a thing this week, Pete. I try all kinds of different Wi-Fi networks here at the house, right? It's the thing I do, right? And I recently moved from the Eero 6Es to the Eero 7s. We talked about that last episode. And then after I did that, there was some more testing that I needed to do with the Synology mesh because it turns out it's still a little bit janky. I know it works well for some of us and doesn't work well for others of us, and that's sort of what janky means, is it's inconsistent. And so I wanted to do a little bit more testing. I have a support ticket open with them where I've been sort of trying to narrow down where the problems are. So I've been going back and forth a lot. I have one of these Skylight frames. I love that thing, right? And one that we have, I've had forever. And it's just awesome because we can send pictures to and from it, Well, I guess not so much from, yeah, I mean, you can download pictures from it, but okay. But it's meant to send pictures to it. We have them, each of the three homes of our family have them. You know, we've got one here in our house, and then each of our kids has one in their homes, and we get to send each other pictures. And it's really cool to just walk into the kitchen and see new pictures on the wall from, you know, Skylar over in Italy, or, you know, Lucas from wherever, you know, he's on the other side of the state, but, you know, wherever. It's just a nice thing. We do it for each other. I noticed that I had broken it. And by broken it, I mean that it was complaining about not being able to connect to Wi-Fi. And it was like, all right, so I go through the thing, I type in the password, and I get the notification from whatever Wi-Fi, you know, this time the Synology app saying, oh yeah, a new device is joined. But the device doesn't think it's joined. It doesn't say that it can't join, but it also doesn't say that it has successfully joined. It's in this like limbo. And then I started thinking, Lucas, when he moved to his apartment, said that he was at best getting it to connect inconsistently. And I'm like, all right, well, I know he's on Eero over there. We talked about that last episode too. And I'm not currently on Eero, but I was, you know, and I will be again, trust me. Okay. But, you know, I'm testing. And so I'm on this Synology thing. I can't wait to get back to my Eeros. In fact, I'm probably just going to do that this weekend. I've got enough answers. And I'm like, okay, so it's not an Eero issue. It's, you know, in fact, it was working for me on Eero. It wasn't here. And then I started looking at my settings and comparing and contrasting my settings between my Eeros, which are running just with a different SSID and this. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. What if I just connect it to the Eero? And I have two Eero networks. It's because the office and the house are far enough apart from each other, but close enough that they were confusing each other. And Eero was like, just run them as two separate networks. Most of us are never going to do this. Eero support knew immediately. They're like, just do this. It's going to solve the problem. And it did. One of my Eero networks, the one in the house, had WPA3 enabled, just like my Synology network does. The Eero network in the office does not have it enabled. And I don't know why that is, but maybe I never went into Eero Labs and turned it on for that one, right? Never thought to. And it was like, aha, wait a minute. And I turned off WPA3 and instantly the frame can, like, without needing to do anything else, the frame connected, started slurping down, you know, 25 pictures that were in the cloud queue to get to it because it finally was able to connect to Wi-Fi. And everything was fine. I'm like, okay, I see. So then I went in to the Synology network, turned off WPA3 there, and just set it to WPA2 personal. And then it was able to connect to that. No issue whatsoever. I sent Lucas a text. I'm like, I know what your problem is with your Skylight Frame, man. But what really became interesting was as I did that, I saw like five or six other notifications that devices had joined the Synology network, a smart bulb that I had, a smart outlet that I had, things like that, that had been also acting a little bit janky, just boom, came right online, no problem. So what I learned is that WPA3 is not meant for us to be using right now. If we have any older smart home devices, and by older,
IoT. Internet.
It's Internet of Things.
You mean 6 months?
I mean 6 months. Like some of these aren't that old. Like I definitely, one of the smart bulbs is a GE Sync bulb, and that I know that I, you know, got, and it was a brand new product within the last year. So and to be fair, you know, Eero has one switch for WPA3, and it's not entirely clear what it does. The Synology network is a little more has a little more granular in what you can choose. In the Synology network, I had it set to WPA2/WPA3 personal. It turns out that is what the Eero setting does. So it doesn't exclude WPA2 stuff, but it in theory allows both to connect. The actual reality is that some devices, even when the access points are in WPA2/WPA3 mode, they still don't connect because the WPA3 thing sort of gets in the way and they get stuck in this limbo that I described. So it is now my blanket advice to not enable WPA3 on any of your access points, especially at home, unless you know that all of your devices, current and future, are going to work with WPA3. And that's a tough sell today. Oh,
there you go. So yeah. I got two questions for you then.
Yeah.
One is your separate Eero's, one in the office, one in the home.
Yeah.
Do you separate their SSIDs and passwords, or are they the same?
No. All my Eero's are running in when I'm in sort of what I'll call default, yeah, like non-testing mode for something. Yeah. My main router.
That's every third Tuesday of every odd number month, right?
Yeah. My main router is the Synology router. That's doing routing, and the Wi-Fi on it will be off. And then the Eero's are all in bridge mode. They aren't doing any routing. They are just doing Wi-Fi. I know it's an embarrassment of riches to be able to. I lead a charmed life.
It's a first world problem,
right? Exactly. But even in bridge mode, having all of the Eero's as one network, they were getting confused with each other again most of them are Wi-Fi hardware backhaul, Ethernet backhaul, including the one in the office. There is Ethernet cable that runs between the house and the office here, but they sort of see each other both ways. They see each other over the hardwire if it's there, and also at the same time over the air. And that over-the-air thing between the house and the office was getting a little janky because it's just close enough to kind of work. And so it was causing some problems. So what Eero had me do was create a second network that's in bridge mode with exactly the same SSID and password. And it's fine. Everything, like, the Eero can't control the roaming as well between the house and the office because they're two separate networks, so they don't talk to each other in that sense. But it doesn't need to because it's far enough away that your devices are going to connect to the right one. Like, it's totally fine. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other one is probably more difficult to answer, which was what's the ostensible advantage to WPA3, less crackable?
In theory, it is more secure than WPA2. Yeah. But as I started digging into this to see, like, okay, I've proven at my house that this is 100% a problem in the way I want to run things. But what do other people say? And there's plenty of other people that report all these things. In that digging, I found that WPA3 has also been cracked. Like, so it's... technically more secure, but not in any meaningful way. From what I can tell, like, I could be wrong about this. In fact, I know that I am. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. I want to hear more of what you folks know about this, too, so that we can kind of increase the hive mind brain trust on this.
Right. Yeah. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
But yeah, even if you don't think you're having problems, because I didn't think I was either, I just have gotten used to some IoT devices being janky, because some of them are, like, whether you have WPA3 on or not.
Everything's solid, yeah, they're still.
And so I didn't realize that at least some of my problems were directly related to me having enabled WPA3. So it is now off for good. And I had turned it on because I thought, well, it's more secure. Like, I should live in the future. Plus, also, I do this show where I, like, experiment with this stuff and learn and talk to people. And so, like, that's why I turned it on. And I'm glad I did, so that we could have this conversation. So,
there you go.
Yep.
So, one other admin thing that I forgot to mention earlier, as did you, is Adam's sitting here completely quiet today.
He is.
Actually, he's not.
You're quiet.
Adam's not here today. He's launching a new website, I think he said, for one of his clients.
Yeah.
And he's there dealing with the directed denial of service attack that I launched on him this morning.
Oh, that's nice of you, Pete.
You
wanted to give him a few more billable hours. I get it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
You know. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's why Adam is with us today.
Yeah, yeah. But that's right. So. Yeah, we talked about it a little pre-show, but you're right. We did not talk about it here. Yeah. Yep. All right. Phil brings us to our next quick tip. And he says, recently I've noticed that when using AirDrop, that my iPhone shows up multiple times. I can only drop to one of them. And he says, I was on with Apple support and they asked if I had a VPN installed. I use PIA, courtesy of Matt Geekab here. Yep. And he says it was on and they said that it could affect AirDrop. I uninstalled it and so far it is back to only one iPhone and drops have been working as they should. Yeah, VPNs can do strange things. PIA and other VPNs also allow for, I forget what they call the feature. Everyone calls it something different, but it's the lockout your network, protect your network connection when you're not connected thing. And that can get even stranger because it starts preventing you from doing things. If it's in the midst of connecting, I've seen that block things like the captive portal pages because it's not letting you connect to a network because it can't get to its VPN server. So just it's kind of like the conversation with WPA3. Understand the implications of each of these features. There are reasons that many of them are left off by default. My guess is Phil probably had one of those sort of extra security features on that was causing this sort of device echo, if you will. But it may not be. I don't know. But yeah, anything that works over IP can be impacted by a VPN. So yeah. So thank you for that, Phil. And I know we have more to dig into.
Keeping with the VPN theme.
Yeah, but we'll keep with the VPN theme for a moment here. And StephRabNYC18, this person's handle in our Discord, says, I was having trouble logging into Ticketmaster. I think if you've listened to this show at some point in the last 6 months, you might have heard me rant about this and might know where this is going. He says, I tried my iPhone, both the app and the different browsers, my iPad, and finally my MacBook Air. In all cases, I was getting an error message indicating I could not log on. Yet less than 2 weeks earlier, I had logged on just fine. Can you guess the problem? He says, I thought about it for a second, and it dawned on me what had changed. I now always have my VPN active on all three devices. As soon as I turned off my VPN, Ticketmaster let me in. Once finished with my transaction, I turned my VPN back on. I have lots of thoughts about this, but none that can be said in public. Thanks for all right. You do. Yeah, well, I went through a similar thing where my now former provider had bought a block of IP addresses from a VPN provider, and Ticketmaster was one of the several sites that locked me out when I wasn't on a VPN because it said, you're on a VPN. In fact, the only way I could get to Ticketmaster was to go through Pete's VPN because he was on a different provider than me. Now we're on the same provider.
Probably in the same block, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, be aware of, in Ticketmaster, they have, you might have heard that they have a bit of a bot problem. And so they have unilaterally sort of made the decision to block all VPN traffic because it's something a lot of websites will do, especially websites that are targeted by fraudsters, right? And Ticketmaster certainly falls into that realm. But yeah, there were several sites I couldn't get to on this provider, and I worked with them. But it's not up to the provider to fix unless they want to move me to a different IP block. Like they've got to fix the internet's opinion of that block. This wasn't going to happen. So ooh, yeah.
Here's I have a quick tip for you, Dave.
Yes, Pete.
since we're now on the same provider, you would be useless for you to VPN into my home and then try to get to Ticketmaster.
Correct.
But I bet you could tether your cell phone.
Oh,
you go. Change your IP address that way.
Yes. And I did that. I started to do that once and then was like, wait, I have access to Pete's VPN. But yeah.
So use his data.
Right. Yeah.
Not that it mattered using mine because we're unlimited.
But, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, Yes, tethering to your phone would be another way to do it. The way I did it the first time when I was fighting with it was I just dropped my phone off of Wi-Fi and connected over the cell network and was able to get right in. And that's also what told me, okay, there's something wrong with my IP address at home, which was, you know, sort of the beginning of that sleuthing process. But Ticketmaster.
And I should have taken my own advice because yesterday and the day before yesterday, I had a problem in the hotel. All of a sudden I got out on the road and I couldn't send email from my personal primary account. My Gmail worked.
Okay.
My Mac Geek Gab mail worked.
Are these all different providers?
Yes.
Okay.
And my iCloud worked.
Got it.
I think Mac Geek Gab is a Gmail account.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So right. But the one that wasn't sending, the one that was blocking you was a different provider than all the others.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
And so I should have tried to tether. Now, that's a whole nother thing. Another screenshot I sent you. I wasn't going to try that from Alaska because my phone never worked in Alaska until
yesterday. Mint works in Alaska now. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah. But I couldn't figure out why. I could get my email all day long.
Okay.
But I couldn't transmit. Every time I transmitted, I'd get in, you know, unable. So send it back. Error. Couldn't. But finally, I pulled up the error message and it was talking about Spam House. And I'm going,
So you were on a blacklisted IP address. It's similar to this other problem.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm going, well, what the heck? And I went and I checked. Private internet access was off. And my VPN to my home, my VPN to your home, neither one of those were on. So I tried turning those on.
Sure. If you're on an IP that's being blocked, change to one that's not.
Yep. Try another. And it wasn't working. And I went in and checked, hey, send all traffic through.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I noticed was that I had Tailscale running. So I tried to turn off Tailscale VPN. Wouldn't do it. So I had to go in and then I tried to go in the back door first instead of going right to the interface and disconnecting or logging out of Tailscale. But eventually I did. I got it out of Tailscale and it worked. So I'm confused as to why and how that worked because it turns out in our pre-show discussion that really wasn't it after all.
Well, I think you're onto something. So what we sleuthed out was as best as we can tell, because you're home now, so you're not on that IP, but the hotel that you were in, the IP address that the hotel in Alaska used is for whatever reason on the blacklist of this one mail provider, not the rest. Right. But one mail provider seems a little more aggressive than the others. Whether they are justified in that or not is we'll leave that for another day.
Right.
Okay, fine. You wanted to use a different IP address than that one. And you had Tailscale running, which, as far as your Mac is concerned, is a VPN.
A VPN.
Right. And it probably, and you could look at this in your network settings, it's probably the first VPN in your list, at least based on what you're telling me, because it was preempting the other VPNs from working. Right. So, you could connect to your home, but Tailscale still was sort of saying, no, I'm going to take
grabbing
the traffic
it over here using the hotels. And then when I did, what's my IP? It was showing me in Alaska, not my home.
Right. Okay. So at least the whole system was being consistent. Okay. That's good. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's a great. And if you folks don't know about that, whatismyip.com is a fantastic little place to go to let you know if your VPN is working or not.
Yes.
So you tried it. Well, the first thing that I think we should address is that using the Mac's, like Mac OS's VPN management, although apparently possible to do for things that have their own app, like Tailscale and PIA and ExpressVPN and NordVPN and all of those, it is not actually doable because turning it on or off turning Tailscale or PIA or Nord or any of those on or off in the Max VPN settings.
System settings.
Yeah, in system settings or with the little menu bar thing that is from system settings is not an exhaustive switch. It doesn't necessarily turn it all off or all on. If they have an app, especially Tailscale, PIA, Nord, ExpressVPN, use the app to do that. Because if you were to have turned Tailscale off with Tailscale's app, it would actually have turned it off, right? As opposed to trying to do it in the system settings.
Turns out I was just knocking at the back door and not actually going in.
You weren't actually going in. Yeah, exactly. And the problem is
getting done what I wanted.
Yeah, the problem is it'll tell you that it's off and then it might be half on and those sorts of things. So if it has an app, in most cases, you just have to use the app. And that's true on your iPhone too, by the way. So that was step one. And then, you know, well, really, we already talked about step two, which is the order of the VPNs. When you're running multiples, you can run multiples, but you got to really think about which one's first. And you can set the service order once they're active. You can set this, or once they're installed, you can set the service order in network settings. So, but I, if I were in your shoes and experiencing that, knowing or at least having sleuthed out that, okay, it's the hotel's IP address. I know my home IP address lets me do this. I would have just connected to a Tailscale exit node that I've already set up.
I just wrote down exit node.
Yep.
That's what I should have tried.
Yeah.
So great minds sometimes think alike.
Yeah, no. And this is something you need to configure in advance. An exit node is a Tailscale device presumably on your home network. It could be anywhere, but it's part of your tailnet. So it's one of your devices that hopefully is on all the time. And then you can use it to route all your traffic through whatever network that device is on. So for me, I have an exit node on one of my Synology disk stations. And so if I need to route traffic through my home network, I'm always connected to my tailnet. And then I just go to the Tailscale menu and choose exit node and that disk station. And boom, now all the traffic is routed as though I were at home. And the nice part is it's all happening within Tailscale. So I'm not at risk of, to borrow a phrase from you, Pete, outsmarting myself. So,
right.
Yes.
So, which brings me to another question.
Yes.
I love doing this. Let's play Stump the Dummy. I always hate that on a check ride and the check airman's going, you know, what's the fuel weight in the right wing? You know, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm flying a plane. Ask somebody else.
Yeah. African or European swallow. if I were to go to that exit node.
Yeah.
Could I print something out on my printer at home, or do I have to put my printer on the Tailscale network?
So there is a setting in Tailscale. If you go to your Tailscale menu and you go to exit nodes, you'll see a preference that says allow local network access.
And it is checked.
If you turn that on, you don't even need to be routed through the exit node for all of your traffic. It will let you print. I'm able to print to my home network without routing through my exit node. I mean, it does use the exit node. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But all of my other traffic that's not aimed at my local network. Is just going, you know, through whatever I'm connected to. But yeah, I print to my home thing all the time. It's great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, Tailscale. Okay. It's freaking magic, man.
I'm just amazed at the more I learn about it.
Yeah.
How seamless it is.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that easy.
I know.
There's some brains back there.
I agree. Well, it's using WireGuard at the core. You know, right before Tailscale became a thing, we started experimenting with WireGuard here. And I was, it's an open, or at least at the time it was, and probably still is, an open source VPN. I installed it. I think Linode was sponsoring us. And so I spun up a Linode instance to test it and put WireGuard on there. And it, you know, it kind of lets you do what Tailscale does, which is it creates a network amongst your devices that feels and acts like a local area network, but it doesn't matter where your devices are. All they need is an internet connection somewhere. So it everything just gets to talk to all of your devices, get to talk to one another as though they are on a local network, whether you are or not. It doesn't matter. I think that's the right way to explain it. And well, and TailScale's available for free for most of us.
Oh, well, that's one for me. You're talking about WireGuard. I just assumed WireGuard was an encryption protocol, for lack of a better word.
I mean, it kind of is.
Yeah, because private internet access uses WireGuard or the other one.
Or OpenVPN or IPEV2. They use different ones. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
But I didn't realize that brings me to maybe another way to skin the cat of trying to use that travel router, that Barrel Axe router, overseas, because I had it working, and somehow I checked something and I went back to try and uncheck it, and it doesn't work anymore to watch YouTube TV in Europe.
Got it. Yeah.
That's not allowed. That's verboten. You pay for this service, you can't use it.
Right. Right. So, yeah. Interesting. It's fascinating stuff. It just be careful that you don't get caught confusing your VPNs with one another. All right, folks, you know that feeling when you're hunting for that rare limited edition gadget and it pops up only in the most unexpected places? Well, hiring top talent can be just like that, unless you're using our sponsor, LinkedIn Jobs. Here's a quick story for us. 3 years ago, we were on the lookout for a social media and promotions ninja. Enter LinkedIn Jobs. It wasn't just about posting a job. It was like setting a beacon for the Sadie of social media to find us. And find us she did. Thanks to LinkedIn Jobs, where over 70% of users aren't checking other job sites, we connected with the best hidden talent out there. And get this, 86% of small businesses report finding a qualified candidate within 24 hours on LinkedIn. It's like finding that needle in a haystack, except LinkedIn turns the haystack into a neat, organized display case. So don't get caught spinning your wheels or missing out on the perfect hire. Whether you're swamped with running your business or just strapped for time, LinkedIn makes it super easy, even helping craft those pesky job descriptions. Hop on LinkedIn Jobs and see why 2.5 million small businesses are making hiring as smooth as their latest iOS update. You've got a mission to grow your team, and LinkedIn Jobs is the gadget that gets it done. Talk about cool stuff found. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/MGG. That's linkedin.com/MGG to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply, and our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring this episode. All right, now it's time to dive into the world of data safety with our favorite backup guardian and our sponsor, Backblaze. Imagine this, you're about to hit save on that mega project you've been grinding on for weeks, and boom, your computer decides today is a good day to crash. Nightmare? Nah, not for us, because we're all snug under the safety blanket of Backblaze. For just $99 a year, Backblaze keeps our Macs and PCs backed up with unlimited cloud storage. It's like having an infinite digital attic where you can stash all your files, and it's all managed through a sleek admin console that even Pilot Pete can navigate. Trust me, he needs all the help he can get. Sorry, Pete, ChatGPT made me say that. I just got to do what I do. And if disaster strikes, whether it's a rogue coffee spill or a pesky ransomware attack, Backblaze has our backs with multiple rapid restore options. Need that data back physically? They'll ship a hard drive straight to your door. Get your data off, send it back within 30 days, you get a full refund. So don't get caught without a backup plan. Head over to backblaze.com/MGG for a no-risk free trial and see why over 55 billion files have been restored. That's right, 55 billion. With Backblaze, you're not just protecting data, you're ensuring your peace of mind. So make sure you take advantage of that fully featured, no-risk free trial. Because you're a Mac Geekab listener, go to backblaze.com/MGG. And our thanks to Backblaze for sponsoring this episode. All right. And as I said in the intro, this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. So let's get real for a second. You know how a computer can slow down if it's overloaded with too many processes? Well, our brains are kind of similar. Keeping all those stressors bottled up can really bog down our mental processors. Now, I'm in therapy myself. And it's like having tech support for my brain, right? Not only does it help declutter my mind, it also helps me upgrade my mental operating system. And you can do the same thing, so you're running smoother than ever. And therapy isn't just for those who feel like they've hit a major system crash. It's for anyone who needs to debug life's challenges. It's really nice just to talk things through. And that's where BetterHelp comes in. It's therapy that's completely online, flexible, and tailored to fit your schedule. Just fill out a quick questionnaire and you're going to be matched with a licensed therapist. Not meshing well? Switch it up anytime. No hard reboots required. So don't get caught with your emotional firewall down. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GeekGab today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GeekGab. Start unloading those tabs that are slowing you down and maybe find a few upgrades along the way. And our thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode.
Well, clearly, Beckblaze knows that universal truth.
What, you can't fix stupid.
So I swear.
They can make it pilot proof. And that's something we've always said about airplane systems and all that. And so Backblaze has apparently made their system pilot proof.
I guess it's pilot proof. So, yeah. You know, I say this often. In fact, we talked about it last week that, you know, I have ChatGPT write the ad scripts because that way it keeps it fresh. Yeah. I have never told it that you, you know, occasionally make yourself the butt of some of these jokes. Like, you know, you definitely have a self-deprecating style that's very endearing. And somehow it knew. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I have to be self-deprecating because I do stupid stuff to myself all the time. Like, edit an Etsy file.
Etsy host file.
Etsy host file, rather. Yeah. And yeah,
Pete edited an Etsy host file on his Mac that almost required me to use BetterHelp for couples counseling. And I don't just mean for me and Pete. I mean for me and Lisa, because it ate up a good chunk of a Saturday for me trying to diagnose something. And then finally I was like, Pete, check your Etsy host file just out of the blue. And you sent it to me. And it was like, he put an entry in there that screwed everything up.
No recollection of ever putting that entry in, too. That's the worst of it. You know, when you make a change like that and don't notice it for weeks.
Yep. Pete outsmarted himself, folks.
I did outsmart myself on that.
I think that might be the episode title. I don't know, but it might be.
Really, right?
Yeah.
No kidding. But noticed another one around here this week, and when it started blowing up on the Discord channels, I went, oh, okay, this is my wife's like, what is going on? Why, you know, I'm locked out of my Apple account. It wants me to reset my passwords. I can't send mail. I can't FaceTime. I can't, like, what? And then I go, you know, you're crazy. You just mistyped your password. Well, turns out she didn't.
Yeah.
Cut and paste. And this thing is, but it didn't hit me and it didn't hit my son.
All happened, I believe, on Sunday of last weekend. And we, you know, we recorded last week's episode on Friday. So we recorded before this ever happened, which is why we're talking about it essentially a week after the fact. But it hit me. It did not hit Lisa nor Lucas nor Skylar. We're all on the same family account. Is Debbie the lead on your family account, Pete?
No.
Okay. I'm just trying to sleuth out
what's the
common denominator?
Universal. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Saturday night is what Tennessee Papa says. That actually checks out. Yeah. Cause it was right before we went out. And, I'm still suffering. Our family group chat, I changed my password. I got back in. Thankfully, I don't have the, like, keep me logged out for an hour if I change my password. I hadn't turned any of that on. So, which I know for a lot of people caused even more issues, right? As you would expect. But I changed my password and then it wiped out all my app specific passwords that I had created for things like BusyCal and my a thing with iCloud for, so that Fastmail can send SMTP via iCloud and things like that. And so I had to recreate those and repopulate them in all the right places and all that stuff. And then I had to relog in, like you said, to FaceTime and iMessage. Most of my iMessage has been fine. Our family group chat, once I re-added my cell or, you know, re-logged into iCloud, it was now a 5-person family group chat and there were 2 Daves in it. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, I don't know what's going. And then I realized, oh, okay, somehow I was in there with my at iCloud.com account, which was not part of my quote unquote me record in my contacts. So okay. I was like, all right, so somebody in my family must have me with that at iCloud address. And somehow that is tied to our family group chat. So I went into contacts and I added that to my me address. Like, fine, if that's what it takes to solve this, great. Turns out that's not what it takes to solve it. Didn't matter. Restarted, did the whole thing. Still 5 people there. Like, okay. And some texts that I had sent just before this issue happened were showing as having come from a different person other than me. You know, it was on the left side of the iMessage chat instead of the right side, right? Like my things are always on the right. Everybody else's things are on the left. That's how iMessage works. And so I was like, nope, it's still over there. Okay, fine. I was like, let me just delete that user from the chat thread. Like, I don't need them here anymore. Well, it removed me and still left a phantom me out there. So I was sitting on the couch. I'm like, Lise, hand me your phone. She's like, what? I'm like, I need to re-add myself to the stupid family group.
And she's need to throw something at the TV and I don't want to break my phone.
Yeah, I need to break something and it's going to be yours. Right. And so I used that. You know, I wiped the other Dave out of that chat and then added myself back in. I also went to my contact record first on Lisa's phone to make sure that there wasn't something there. And there was, like, she still had some old at MacObserver.com addresses for me and her contact record on my phone. And it was like, all right, well, let me get those out of there just so that everything is, like, settled. Then I added it back in. And on my, well, let me look. On my Macs, there, it's still showing those messages as having come from a Dave Hamilton that is not me. But all other and prior messages that came from me are me, and all messages since then that came from me are me. So it's just the ones right before this happened that Saturday night, right? At this was Sunday night. This was definitely Sunday because iMessage is telling me it was Sunday night, and it's it was 9:20 p.m. I sent a text to the family with a picture of one of the cats, because that's basically what our family chat's all about. and then that was at 9:20. An hour later at 10:24, I removed myself from the conversation. And then it says, you removed Dave Hamilton. Dave Hamilton removed Dave Hamilton. And then I left the conversation. And then a couple of those again, many of them again. And then finally, my wife added me back to the conversation. So, but it's still a little janky but my iPhone somehow has decided that those messages with the pictures of the cat did come from the person that it believes is me. So there's still something weird out there, but none of my other group chats were impacted. So go figure. Right. So, in the end, I am through this problem, right? Like, I don't have, other than this one sort of lingering anomalous group of texts, I'm not experiencing any follow-on issues to this, other than the fact that I had to reset all of my app-specific passwords and sort of deal with that.
But, yeah, because that's just easy to do. That's an hour of your life you won't get back.
Oh, and it's, you know, I have BusyCal on my phone, my iPad, and all three of my Macs. And so it's like, okay, great. You know, now I got to go and, like, deal with this. And I also, just before this happened, I decided to move from I had a paid subscription with BusyCal, and it came up for renewal. And I was like, you know, I have SetApp. I'm just going to use the version in SetApp. Like, I don't need to pay for BusyCal if I also have SetApp. So I moved to the SetApp version of BusyCal, but that's been its own little sort of frustrating headache that I caused for myself. That's on me. But the timing of it was like, great. Now I've got two versions of BusyCal on my computer that keep asking me, and I don't want to answer for one of them. But yeah, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, but which one?
Right. And I don't. That's the problem. Is yeah, exactly. Yeah. But to answer your question, what the heck happened? We don't know. I posted on Twitter the moment that like it happened to me, but nobody else in my house. And I was like, okay, this is weird. That post blew up. It was quoted in, you know, I think both 95 Mac and Apple Insider's pieces. Yeah. I had a lot of comments, and they all were basically the same of this is what happened to them, like symptomatically. But there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason that anyone has sleuthed out as to.
No, and Apple's not been like, hey, we know there's a problem and we're working on it.
Or nothing.
The radio silence has been deafening.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I just don't understand why they said nothing. What is this?
Yeah.
Like just acknowledge it.
We're aware there's a problem. We're still working on it.
Yep. We know a thing happened and we're sorry. Like something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, did the lawyers stop them from sending something out?
Isn't there a thing? Didn't the SEC or some FTC, some three-letter agency mandate that publicly traded companies had to divulge any security issues within 4 business days of them happening?
Yeah. Need to own it ASAP, yeah.
Right? Like there's the need to own it law. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but if that's, I think that's the case. I'm just a hack lawyer. But assuming that that's the case, then this would tell me it doesn't fall under that, which means it wasn't a security issue at Apple. It was just a technical glitch that some of us. Hey, let me ask you this. When you log into iCloud, Pete, do you use at mac.com or at me.com or at iCloud.com?
Yes. So how's that for an answer? Usually I log into iCloud using iCloud.com, but still my primary is a me.com address. So, you know, I did not try
is Debbie's to log in. Because I log in as mac.com. Ooh, does Debbie log in as mac.com?
No.
Okay.
Hers is Debbie at my domain. That's her Apple ID.
That's her Apple ID. That's okay to have. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, so much for that theory. Because I thought maybe it was an authentication issue with, you know, the at mac.com path of getting in.
Sure.
It's all the same account, right? Just for clarity, it's all the same account if you joined at a time when you could get, when they handed out a mac.com address. Mac.com was first, right? Then me.com,
right.
Then iCloud.
Then me.com.
Yeah.
And while you were talking, I went to iCloud.com in Safari, and it came up with a default login, the myme.com.
Okay.
With a, you know, finger. And I thought this had affected me at first because it was a passkey login and it failed. And I went, that's unusual.
Oh, I wonder if my passkey is going to fail.
And then I used my password and I got in. But just now I used my passkey to get in. So.
Okay. I'm looking to see if I can sign in with a passkey that I know was created prior to this. And yes, I can. So my pre-existing passkey was not invalidated, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, folks, feedback at MacGeekUp.com. Please, if you have any just symptoms to share that you think might help us, I would love to sort of use our sort of size and brain trust to at least try and figure out if it's figure outable, who and what would have been impacted by this because Apple ain't talking.
Yeah. So if you have a swag, you can share with us.
I'm sorry, Pete, what's a swag?
Dave?
Yes,
that's
Pete?
A scientific wild ass guess.
Now I don't know what to use for the yeah.
Send us your swag.
Making swags fun again. There you go. Okay.
There you go.
We're just making swags again. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. 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 All right.
Huh. Send us your swag.
Send us your swags. I like it.
Because we don't have any more.
Yeah.
Not for this issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Swagging left and right is what we do. Swags to the left of us, jokers to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle JT Ray and his question to take us out of all this craziness. I'll read the question. It's fine. He says, so my new Mac Studio has a desktop local and a desktop iCloud. I have synced this Mac turned on. Am I missing something? Do I need to turn off iCloud and turn it back on? Do I need to turn off sync this Mac and turn it back on? So he did. He sent us screenshots, Pete, and they showed that he's got two desktop folders. One, it shows in the Finder title bar as desktop local. The other in the title bar is desktop iCloud. But the names of the folders are simply desktop. The Mac is being smart enough to differentiate with them in its labels. But like the desktop local folder is named desktop in his home folder. That's it. And the desktop iCloud folder is named desktop in the mobile documents folder, which is the, you know, iCloud synced folder. So this is interesting. I don't know that I'd ever seen this before, but I checked on my Mac just to confirm. And I do have documents and data syncing turned on. And I do not have a desktop folder in my home folder. So there would be no reason for it to have to differentiate because there's nothing to differentiate between on my computer. And his desktop, in the screenshots that JT Ray sent, his desktop folder, the local one, is empty. I mean, it's a brand new Mac. So if it were me, I would just delete the local desktop folder to eliminate the confusion and just let everything. And my guess is at that point, the system will stop calling the desktop iCloud folder desktop iCloud. It's worth a shot.
Yeah. So this makes me wonder, is this at all related? Because let's go down another rabbit hole.
Sure.
I've got two email accounts in Mac Mail that are identical. My iCloud account. And I know I told you about this once before, and I managed to get it to delete ever so briefly one time. But I called Apple support over it, and they went through it with me, and they went, "Huh, that's wrong. Well, when you upgrade to Sonoma, it'll go away." And it did, and then it came back. So this is weird.
I don't think these two things are related.
Well, two desktop folders, these aren't clones of one another. His are different. That's right.
Separate
Whereas
folders.
I've got two clones on the iCloud mail account.
Can you just deactivate one of them?
No, if I deactivate one, it deactivates the other.
It is a display anomaly, not a duplicate of. What you're saying is they're both being treated the same. Like if you go into one and change a setting, that setting is mirrored on
Oddly
the other
enough,
one.
I took one offline, and I thought it took them both offline, but it does not.
Do you get two in the sidebar of mail? Like does it show up twice there?
Yes.
And what happens if you go to your home library mail folder and you can get to your library folder in the Finder, go to the Go menu, hold down the Option key, and library will magically appear in the list. Choose it.
Yeah.
And then go to home library mail and go, you're on Sonoma. Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Go to the V10 folder here. And in there, you will see a series of folders with like serial number type names. Each one is a separate mail account. And so you kind of have to twist them open, to see, as you twist them open, you'll get a sense of which account is which. Don't change the names of these folders to make your life easier. It won't make your life easier.
So I've got an inbox on the very top one.
Yeah, okay. And nothing more?
Yeah, nothing more. And yep. Then, well, is it?
So twist open to see, are there two folders here, set one each for these two iCloud accounts?
Yeah. Well, the problem is I have four mail accounts.
Okay.
In Mac Mail, so figuring out which one is which.
But how many folders are listed? I mean, you're going to have a mail
in
data in V10. Ignore them.
V10, I have 10 folders.
Oh, so you have some old data. Well, look at the ones that have been modified recently.
Oh, okay. Let me put it in list mode and do that. List. Date modified. All today.
All 10 of them?
Except for one that says orphaned account.
Okay.
June 1, 2023.
Okay.
And that has one of the inbox, mbox info. I could probably delete that, right?
Well, I wouldn't. If I were you, if I were there, what I would do next. Nope. I wouldn't do anything of the sort. I would make a backup onto a separate disk of the entirety of the mail folder, and it might be very big, like you know, because if it's going to have all your archives and everything,
it's going to be gigabytes. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. And I would make that backup, and then I would eject that drive so that nothing can go find it, because mail is smart. It will go and seek things out. I've seen it do it, right? So get it offline, powered down. You know you've got this backup in essentially cold storage. And then what I would do is delete both of those iCloud accounts from mail and then add them back. Add one back. Please don't add it twice.
Yeah.
And see what happens. Like if you delete two of them, what I've learned about mail, though, and this is true also on the iPhone, you just can't see it, is that when you delete an account, it at least in the past, it's been a little while, it doesn't delete the core data is the wrong term, the previous data folder from the V10 account here in or the V10 folder here in mail. So it might wind up creating a new one in there. It might wind up reattaching to an old one. I don't know. But when you add the new one in, I'd be curious to see whether it adds one. I mean, this is obviously like this is probably the extent of as far as we're going to take it on the show here, but that's the troubleshooting that I would do. Yeah. Okay. With that.
So that whole mail folder.
No, don't delete anything. Make the backup. Take it offline.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Then delete the mail accounts.
Delete them from system settings.
iCloud accounts.
In system settings. Yeah. I'm glad you asked that question. Yeah, no, okay. that clarity was important.
I'm tired, man. So same. I was just going to go deleting stuff.
Same. Yeah. So.
Oh, too funny.
Yeah. All right. Shall I play JP's question here, Pete?
Let's do that. Yes.
All right. Now I got to get my system back to where I can actually find these things.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't know where anything is anymore, Pete. Right. We've been doing all this crazy stuff. All right, JP. Here, let's see.
Of the Geek Gab, it's JP, currently in Los Angeles. Here's a good one. I'm sure we all know someone like this. I have a friend that I do their IT for them over the years. And this is a person that just refuses to update his machinery and his software and stuff. So like every 5 years, you know, I'll get an emergency. Oh my God, my stuff, I can't open my blah. You know, you know how it goes.
I do.
Anyway, after spanking him for not having his Time Machine drive plugged in, which I set up for him, yet he turned it off once it started asking to be, you know, erased and reformatted and stuff. Anyway, so he's basically lost everything from now back to 2021. So he had to buy a new computer. Anyway, that's the nightmare part. But that gets me to this. This guy has maybe 10 million files and folders on his computer. And he's the guy that, you know, in the old days, dating back to the 90s, would just back stuff up, put it in a folder, and then just save it. And a lot of it is sitting on his desktop. So I was going through that this morning, looking at it via screen share, and it's a shite storm. So my question is this, not that I'm going to go through with this, but it made me curious. For guys just like this, is there an app somewhere in the universe that will scan a hard drive and literally remove duplicates of stuff that's the same over the years? I know one must exist, but I know that the gentleman of the Gab will absolutely know the correct one. Whereas you can, it'll scan it, show you the duplicates, and then you have the choice to delete them or put them off onto a separate drive. So in case there's a mistake. So I wouldn't have to go through 4 million folders for this guy and try and organize for him. I think that would be a mistake. And it might be even more than this organizational freak can handle. Anyway, if you have any ideas, let me know. Thank you very much for all you do. I'm tapping to
JP, I resent that. You said you weren't going to tell on me.
Well played. Might you have an answer for him anyway,
saying,
Pete?
I do. He said one must exist, and one does, in fact, exist. And it's one of my favorites. And lo and behold, SetApp to the rescue again. Gemini, right? Astrological sign for the twins. Gemini goes and finds the duplicates, and it will find. Stand by, JP. I can tell you, if you run Gemini on this computer, it sounds to me like you're going to have 4, 6, 8, 40 copies, and it will find all of them. And it has a default delete, which I don't particularly care for. Sometimes when I have a duplicate file, I go, oh, I put it in that folder and it selected that one to delete. But it finds it. It will set up an automatic delete and reserve. In fact, if you have two identical files and you select both of them for deletion, it will pop up with a warning, which you can disable that warning.
Sure.
If you want to do so at your own peril, it will come up and say, are you sure you want to delete both of these? Because I'm going to get rid of them.
Huh.
So I like Gemini, and I run it on my home folder and let it go, and it finds gigabytes of stuff for me. Huh. Does a really nice job.
Yeah. I mean, I know that I've used Gemini in the past.
Yeah.
It almost certainly would have been my answer here too, but I don't have the same working knowledge of it that you do. This really sounds like the answer to this. Like, I mean, it
I
truly
think so.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's reliable. It's from MacPaw.
Right. Right.
And those guys know their Macs.
They know their stuff for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So. Cool. Cool. All right. Shall we answer James's question, Pete?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Are you going to read it, or should I read it?
You know what? Hang on. I can find James's question.
I mean, I can read it. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, he basically wants to know about the what he says. What do I need to connect IoT at 2.4 gigahertz? He says when I install a new IoT device, Internet of Things, and that's your smart light bulbs and switches, that kind of stuff, for those just joining us, there is often a vague warning to ensure that I connect over 2.4 gigahertz rather than 5 gigahertz band of my Wi-Fi during setup. Why is this? How do I ensure I have a 2.4 gigahertz connection? My Wi-Fi seems to make up its own mind in regards to which band it connects things onto. So, and Dave, you had, we chit-chatted about this a little bit before the show, and you had a better answer than I did. I thought it was just forced because that's where the light bulb works only. It only works in the 2.4 band.
And that
in
is
some
true.
Cases, that's true.
No, in many cases, in fact, I would say in all of these cases, that's true. But to his point, his Wi-Fi or his devices seem to make up their own minds in regards to which band they connect to. And I will guarantee you that if you have an IoT device that has a 2.4 gigahertz radio in it, it will only connect to another 2.4 gigahertz radio. There is zero risk of it trying to connect, or at least it being able to connect to a 5 gigahertz radio if it doesn't have 5. Like, that's just a physical limitation, and that's okay. And you're right that when client devices are connecting to the named SSID, this is the network name that you give your Wi-Fi. You know, it might be like, you know, Pete's Castle or something. I know that's not the name of your Wi-Fi, but, you know, we all have our names. A lot of people like to use, you know, FBI surveillance van as the name of their Wi-Fi. you know, whatever your Wi-Fi name is, if a device knows the name and is connecting to the name, it will scan the list of available networks, pick the one that has that name and has the strongest signal for it, whether it's 2.4 or 5. It, you know, it has an algorithm that it makes this decision, and then it tries to connect to that one. Every radio in every access point has a separate hardware address, a separate MAC address, right? And so it pulls up, you know, a device like your Mac or your iPhone will pull up the list. It'll see all the 2.4 and 5 and now 6 gigahertz radios out there. Pick the one, like I said, with the algorithm. Then it says, all right, what's the MAC address of that radio? Great. I'll use that MAC address with this password that you gave me, and I will connect to that. And it's made its decision on its own. And it remembers the name so that as conditions change, it might jump around and go to different things. All of that is totally fine. However, a lot of the software for these IoT devices is not written very well. And what it does is it's lazy. It doesn't look and do the scan by name. It just asks the iPhone, what network are you connected to? And more specifically, what is the MAC address of the access point that you're connected to? And then it says, great, I'll use that. And if your iPhone is connected to a 5 or 6 gigahertz access point and the device needs a 2.4 gigahertz access point, it's going to pass that hardware, that MAC address, along to the device and say, connect to this. And it won't be able to connect because, as we discussed, a 2.4 gigahertz radio can't connect to a 5 gigahertz radio. It's just not how that works. So it is the lazy software that causes this really nebulous warning message that says, make sure your phone is connected to a 2.4 gigahertz network before you try to attach this new IoT device to a network. And that's why this comes up. The solution is to do exactly as they say. Now, this often requires going into your router settings and changing a few things, at least temporarily, so that your iPhone will connect to the device that you want it to connect to the radio. Some routers like Eero have a feature where you can temporarily turn off the 5 gigahertz radio and the 6 gigahertz radio for 5 minutes and then do your thing, and then it turns it back on and everything's happy. Others, like if I was going to do this on my Synology, I would have to turn off what they call Smart Connect, which Smart Connect bridges all of the radios together as one SSID. You turn it off, you set your 2.4 gigahertz radio to the main SSID, the main network name that you use, set the 5 gigahertz to something else temporarily, save those settings, let it repopulate everything, then do your connection, then go back into your router, turn all that back on. It's a pain in the neck. And it's because for these IoT devices, the setup routines in the software is lazily written. That's really just what it is. But that's why. Did that make sense, Pete? Did I do it?
Absolutely.
Okay?
No, okay. Absolutely. All right. It does. And then,
And also, as we said in the quick tip section of the show, make sure WPA3 is off. Otherwise, you might be heading down a separate heading for yourself. So,
right. Speaking of banging your head against a brick wall.
Yep.
Through which a 2.4 gigahertz signal will better penetrate.
better.
Better than your head, anyway.
Yeah, better than your head. That's true. That's true. Yep, yep. 2.4 gigahertz goes through brick walls better than your head. Yeah.
That's a long show title.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of options this week. Yeah. I'll be curious to see which one we have picked. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Matt's question there. That's the next one.
All right.
What's the best way to send documents to tax preparers?
Yes.
Any decent tax preparer worth his salt is going to have a portal.
Yeah. So, yeah. No? So Matt needed or still needs, I know April 15th has passed us by, but
that doesn't help you. That doesn't help Matt, but sorry.
Well, unless Matt is on, like a lot of us, Matt might have filed an extension for his taxes or need to do this next year. And, Matt's accountant has asked him to send him, documents and Matt wants to do it securely. And Matt's tax preparer is, evidently not the most technologically savvy one. So, or maybe you're a tax preparer out there and you want to learn what to use for your clients. If you're a listener to this show, Synology would be the Synology file sharing thing is a great way to set that up. You can do that for inbound or outbound stuff and it's all secure. But if you want to do it, without having to buy your own hardware and do all that stuff, Dropbox has a service where you can do file requests and they are sent securely. iCloud can send outbound file requests and those can be secured. And then Rod in our chat says he's used Tresorit, T-R-E-S-O-R-I-T, for several years. So that would be another one. Send.tresorit.com. So that would be another one. How do you do this with your tax preparer, Pete?
So my guy does have a portal.
Okay.
But if he didn't, one, I would search for a new tax guy.
Yeah. Two, yeah, fair.
And two, but if I had to send a document, I would just use Preview and save it as a PDF, password protected.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
I mean, you know, could it be hacked? Yeah. But...
Yeah.
Everything can, right? Even WPA3.
It turns out. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'd be curious to hear what other people use, or if you're a tax preparer, you know, what you use with your clients or what you've looked at. Because it would be interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So Kiwi Graham in the chat says his accountant runs a box.com repository. Oh,
there you go.
Yeah. Tennessee Papa says he puts his on iCloud and sends a link to his accountant. Yeah, all of these things are fine. I have two different accountants that I use, and they use different systems. But yep, Brian says that Adobe has an option, so we will put that link in the show notes too. So yeah, there's lots of this is a solved problem.
It is indeed in many different ways.
Yeah.
That cat has been skinned multiple times.
Yeah.
All nine lives gone.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But in a great way, it works well. We're in the process of selling a business that none of you know about. It's not anything that's related to anything that you talk about. It's a business that I've had kind of an interest in for about 6 years here. And we needed to create a data room to share all kinds of things, financial documents, you know, contracts, like they want to see everything about the business that they're acquiring, which absolutely makes sense. And so I actually used my disk station for that data room because our attorney was like, well, you're going to want to secure this and you're going to want to limit who can download and who can do what. And maybe it would be nice if you could watermark things. And I'm like, actually, I think my disk station Synology office can do all of that. And so we set it up and it's been fantastic. It's worked really, beautiful. Really well. Yeah. Super smooth for everybody. And so, yeah, it's like there's all kinds of these solutions out there. So
it's almost like those guys at Synology thought about it and understand how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. You it's know? Crazy. Yeah. Yeah. they've got it right. Yeah. I'm curious to see what Ugreen brings to the table on this front.
Yeah.
Cause they know where the bar is set and that's the important part. So yeah. I'm curious to see what happens.
Dave.
Pete.
This has been a long show, hasn't it?
Hey, you know what? It feels long. We're at an hour and 18 minutes, which is, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not as long as you thought. Yeah.
I didn't reset my clock, so we did 40 minutes before we got started.
That's the thing is, we did an extra 10 on the front end of this
because
there was some additional tech support for Pete. But
it was fun. Because it's Thursday.
Because it's a day that ends in Y.
Yeah.
Why? Because we like you. That's how it works. Right. We also like CashFly. That ends in Y. CashFly provides all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Make sure to check out Pete's other show, the one that his mug comes from. So There I Was. And then I have two other shows, Business Brain and Gig Gab. Got some fun interviews coming up on Gig Gab. We actually just interviewed Matt Musty from Train, the drummer from Train. I've got probably the nerdiest sound. Nerdiest sounds bad. One of the nerdiest sound engineers out there coming on, this guy, Robert Scoville. He's done sound for everybody. He's currently out on the road with doing stadiums with Kenny Chesney. So we've got him coming on the show. It's been fun. Yeah, really.
Nice.
Yeah. I've been learning a ton, and I love it. It's great. So
nice.
If you're a musician or into music, please check out Gig Gab. So, share this show with somebody.
Absolutely. Doesn't cost you anything. Share the show. And those of you that contribute, thank you.
Thank you.
That's cool. Hey, Dave, I'm sorry. I'm going to take a point of personal privilege.
Oh, yeah, but the outro's playing.
I've got a cool one this week.
Okay.
She learned, born in East Germany, learned to fly 4 years ago, flew her small airplane across the Atlantic and back. An amazing.
Oh, I want to listen to this.
So There I Was. Yeah.
Cool. Whoa. That's great. I'm glad you took that moment, Pete.
Yeah.
You want to take another moment and share a few more words of wisdom?
Yeah.
And by few, I mean three?
Yeah, she didn't. And that was good because she's going to do it again this summer. But for me, I wouldn't do it. The main reason is because I would say I don't want to. And I'm going to tell you, don't get caught.
Made on a Mac.
It's good advice. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody.
See ya.
Later.